Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is A Lot to Learn with Austin Rogers. For the guy who knows everything, he's still got a lot to learn. Without further ado, here's Austin.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, good night. I have no idea what time it is because it is a podcast and you listen to podcasts whenever you might. Perhaps you are now on the 7 train out to Flushing Meadows to see the finale of the United States Open, which is completely apropos because we are here with Mr. Shiv Paul, who is the chair of the diversity committee of the USTA and the communications director of the Gay Games. Did I get that all right?
Close. I'm the vice chair of the USTA's National Diversity and Inclusion Committee. Not the chair yet.
Okay. Oh, vice chair. I'm so sorry. I accidentally gave you a promotion.
Well, maybe that will manifest into that. You said that, Austin.
Shiv, welcome.
Thank you.
Now, diversity, inclusion, and the Gay Games, and tennis. Mm. Tennis has a special place in the sports firmament in that it is a truly, truly international game. You have people from virtually every country represented. Althea Gibson's statue just went up at the U.S. Open, which is named after Arthur Ashe, which has the Billie Jean King Center. Out civil rights, gay activism. This all happens in tennis.
Yeah.
But we don't see it in other sports. Why do you see that?
You know, it's an interesting question. I mean, you're absolutely right in terms of tennis being almost everyday kind of like international relations, right? Because you have people from different countries playing matches and people from different socioeconomic backgrounds and upbringings and, you know, different sexualities and genders and that kind of thing. You know, I'm not sure if that in itself answers a question of why it's sort of all encompassing in terms of all of those different pieces. I mean, when you think of the concept of intersectionality and what makes up somebody's identity, you know, it's no longer just one thing. It's not sort of being gay or being straight or, you know, it's not based on your gender. It's a combination of all of those kinds of things. And as you talk about that, it sort of occurs to me that tennis, I think, automatically encompasses all of those things at once. So
right.
I'm not sure if that's really an answer to the question.
Well, maybe it's, is there something inherent in the nature of the sport that allows for the individual who might be of a different ilk to progress vis-a-vis, say, a hardcore team sport?
I think the way that I would answer that question is, you know, tennis is ultimately, it's an individual sport. I mean, obviously there are, you know, many people that go into making a player when you're talking about the professional tour, but ultimately, you know, you're one individual, when we're talking about singles, obviously, who is there on the court, and really you're kind of left to your own devices to make it work and to win. And so for me, tennis is very much like life, right? You know, you have to problem solve, you have to roll with the punches, you have to have patience, you have to be able to be adaptable and sort of change from minute to minute. And so I say all of that to say that I think it's a really good learning ground for the rest of life, right? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, as an individual, you have to be able to face, of course, success, but failure as well, right? And live with that on a regular basis. And I think, you know, Roger Federer, I think I'd have to paraphrase him because I can't remember exactly how he said it, but he said something along the lines of, if you are not prepared to fail, then you shouldn't go into sport. And I think that's kind of true of life, right? You know, you have to sort of be able to be adaptable To survive.
He didn't prepare to fail that well then, did he? Because unless he's playing a Spaniard on a clay court.
exactly.
But you also just said it, it being an individual sport, and yes, you have coaches and managers and, you know, equipment gurus and stuff like that throughout your professional tennis career. Mm-hmm. But in the amateur or in the spirited semi-professional realm, you said it earlier, international relations, because mm-hmm. it's you out there against someone else on the court, and you're going to see them through the duration of your life because yeah. you're in the same age group, you're in the same bracket. So it's you, them, and the referee, but it's actually you and them. So you gotta, I guess you do have to relate to people in. Whereas if it's the Yankees playing the Red Sox, it's they're wearing the white, we're wearing the gray. Yeah. There's a unit mass to that. Tennis is a very individual, even when you're playing doubles. It's you and your partner versus yeah. two other people.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. I mean, I have something to say about that. But just to go back to what I was saying in terms of, you know, you asking why you think sort of tennis kind of breeds that or, you know, educates people in that realm. You know, I think it's almost kind of everyone's own coming out story. And when I say coming out story, I just mean getting to a point of living where you truly accept yourself and, you know, you love yourself unconditionally and, you know, you recognize all the kind of good, the bad, the ugly parts of yourself. And, you know, you decide what you're going to do with that. I think tennis really helps uncover all of those aspects of mm-hmm. yourself. And then it's kind of up to you what you do with that. And if we talk about Roger Federer again, you know, amazing player, really classy guy, but you know, he also used to have a temper on him, right? And there's another famous story he tells about when he was really acting up on the court with his dad when he was younger, and his dad just left him and said, you know, that behavior is unacceptable. Mm-hmm. And he said that was a real kind of turning point for him to realize, okay, how do I want to behave? How do I want to act? So, you know, I think that is something that tennis does. It helps your own kind of individual journey through life of finding out, you know, who you are.
Right.
And then what did you just ask me? We were going back to...
It's you and another player right. and the referee, but it's right. actually you and the other player. So international right. relations, right. you have to relate to that other player because you're going to see them through the duration of your career.
Exactly. You know, I think the thing about sport, and, if you think about the Olympics... And, you know, everyone has an opinion about the Olympics and many challenges and issues associated with that. But, you know, it's famously, you know, not political, right?
Except it is. Yeah. It's not political in caps, but exactly, in parentheses is shh.
Exactly. Well, I was doing air quotes when I said, you know, it's not political. But you know, I think that's part of the point of sport, right, is that you can dispense with... you know, your nationality, almost your gender. I mean, nationality is important. Obviously, you know, people play for the country and very passionate about that. But what I'm trying to say is that, you know, when you're on the court, and I think with any sport, right, if you're good and you play well in a professional capacity, then people like you, right? And they don't really care whether you're
oh yeah I'm a huge Djokovic fan. Exactly. I don't like Djokovic. Go Coco. No, I'm right. Team Naomi.
Right, exactly. So, you know, I think,
by the way, go Coco.
Exactly, right, love her. She's got a very bright future.
Oh my god,
big fan of hers. But you know what I'm trying to say is that I think sport in a way is sort of designed to transcend all of that, and that's why it does kind of corral people and make people very passionate and that kind of thing, because it is, it's community and it's part of identity and it's, you know, fun as well and all those kinds of things. But I think it's a space where you actually can sort of be more of yourself than you may be able to be in other areas of your life, like at work or, you know, even sometimes at home or all those sorts of things, if that makes sense.
That does make sense. That completely makes sense. Now back to the self. Mm. So you're talking about the self and maybe an amplified version of yourself. As the vice chair of the Diversity and Inclusion Committee of the USTA, nailed it that
you
time.
Did. Well done.
And the communications chair of the Gay Games. Where is the role in the athlete, like, to be out and outspoken. And by the way, I mean that both in an LGBTQ way, but I also mean it sort of in black rights and civil rights and minorities and the oppressed in general kind of way. What's the role of the athlete in that, especially in your capacity, is trying to shepherd this role between the institution, the sport, and your mandate as both diversity and the gay games?
So two sort of very different roles, actually, but, you know, very kind of similar agendas, which is to, promote awareness of sport, visibility of sport, to encourage more participation, whether that's as a player, an attendee, a spectator, you know, any of those sorts of things. So the mission is sort of very similar. I mean, there is a saying, and I do a lot of work in diversity and inclusion, and I always have, and diversity obviously is very important to me, but inclusion, I think, more than that. You know, ever since I was young, I never wanted anybody to feel left out, you know, so it was always very important for me to make people feel accepted and to feel sort of, you know, that they belonged as much as everyone else. So what I was going to say was that there is a saying when you work in diversity and inclusion that you're basically, what your goal is to do yourself out of a job, right? I mean, the point is we want to live in a world where you don't need to have diversity and inclusion committees to work with marginalized groups, because ultimately you don't want groups to be marginalized, right? So I think activism takes many different forms. And, you know, at a basic level, I think the purpose of the athlete, right, if we're talking in the professional sphere, who is perhaps, you know, a minority, or, you know, it does come from one of these or more of these marginalized communities, I think it's just to turn up, right? It's just to turn up, to show your face, to be representative of that community or communities, so that people can see themselves represented there, you know.
That in itself is the, I get you.
That's certainly one form. You know, when we talk about these different diverse communities, obviously, you know, some are clearly more obvious than others, right? You know, I mean, I'm a person of color. If I turn up and I'm brown, or, you know, you turn up and you're black and you're playing, that kind of thing, then obviously you're representing, you know, other people who look at you and perhaps, you know, idolize you and things like that. When it comes to sexuality, obviously that's more hidden. And so, you know, I don't know if the purpose of an active gay athlete is actually to come out on the tour and sort of be, you know, an activist in that sense. You know, when you think about, again, intersectionality and the things that make up identity, sexuality is just one part of that. And again, if you think about sport as sort of being a place where you don't necessarily have to marginalize yourself, I think that's probably one of the core reasons why there aren't, particularly on the male side of the tour, there aren't any active openly gay players today.
Oh, I didn't think about that. Because you think about the famous cases of, like, you know, Michael Sam, the NFL player who came out as gay. You're right. It's the prominent gay activists are Martina and Billie Jean King and stuff like that.
Right. And I think in some...
So stigma's still there.
Yeah, but I think that also, you know, that also comes to kind of society stereotyping and things like that. And, you know, if you have a female athlete, then...
Oh, right. That's a double-edged sword. There's even a stereotype inherent in that. Right. She's really good. Must be gay.
Right, exactly.
Oh,
you know,
man.
You're a female soccer player, you must be gay. It's kind of like back in the day, you know, you're a male flight attendant, you must be gay.
Right.
You know, hairdresser, you must... I mean, I'm, you know...
No. But, yeah. I didn't think of it from the flip edge, that it's like, now if you're hyper-talented and sort of on the more masculine side of the feminine spectrum, you're automatically branded. You're like, no, that's my husband, everything's cool. And then you've got to fight to, oh man, oh,
So my point about
I see.
My point about that was, I think, you know, maybe it's maybe there is sort of more acceptance for lesbian professional sports people,
right?
To be, and there are some, you know, there are obviously, you know, there are out female players who play on the tour today, but I think even, you know, even for them, the when you are a professional sports person, right, or whatever kind of profession you go into, but we're talking about sports right now,
yeah,
you basically you want to be the best, right? You know, that's how you make your living, that's how you're, that's your job. You're there to play, to compete, to win. And I think sexuality isn't necessarily something that comes into the equation for everybody.
I don't want to be the best gay player, I want to be the best player,
right?
Full stop.
Exactly.
Yeah,
you know, and there are so many things that go into becoming successful, I think, in that sphere, that when you look at players who are doing very well, or actually, let me take that back. You know, you look at players who are surrounded by a system in order to allow them and enable them to play well and to compete and to win. There's somebody to take care of everything, so that all that player has to really worry about is getting that yellow ball over the net, right?
Right.
And winning that point.
Okay, you've actually changed my perspective a little bit, because I'm outspoken and I believe in activism, and in a way, going too far goes too far, and just showing up and being here and being like, oh, I'm a great athlete. Well, you're gay. It's like, yeah, well, I'm still a great athlete. Moving on, because this is just me. It's not something I have to telegraph, because I'm already telegraphing it by showing up and stepping over that line.
Right, right. I mean, I think, you know, the question becomes one of authenticity, right? You know, I think just because you are because you're not coming out doesn't necessarily mean that you're lying about your sexuality and things
right.
like that. And, you know, like I say, I think activism takes many different forms. And, you know, I won't lie by saying that I think it would be nice to have some active professional players who do come out. But I also sort of understand the reasoning of them not wanting to be sort of consumed by that always being the talking point, right? Which is probably what would happen.
A loving kiss of your wife after winning the World Cup is a bigger statement than walking out fist raised saying, we're here, we're queer, you know, let's go. Awesome. I love that. I love that tenet right there. Now, let's go down to the intimate level. Ooh. In the day-to-day non-professional world, like you highlighted in your film Queens of the Court. Mm. That is where being out and being community oriented is now being vocal is part of it. Talk a little bit about this film and what you were working on in the LGBT tennis community.
Yeah, so I made Queens at Court around 5 or 6 years ago, I think. It was back in 2014. And a really good friend of mine, Kenrick Ross, who is also, you know, quite a big player on the gay tour. There's a gay tour called the Gay and Lesbian Tennis Alliance. They have about 60 tournaments around the world, I think. They're probably 10,000 players, and, you know, you pay to play at these tournaments. And I'd moved to New York the end of 2005, maybe. And a couple of years after that, sort of took up tennis again. And I was not aware that there was this whole world of, you know, not just a gay tennis league and a gay tennis tour, but multiple gay sports leagues, particularly in New York. There was the Gay Games, which I'd never heard of, you know, all of these different avenues, which when I was a kid, I don't think they really existed. So I found that really fascinating, and had said to Ken, I want to kind of document this in some way and make a movie about it. And I didn't really know what I wanted to make necessarily, but I was fascinated by the fact that these avenues and outlets existed, and I think they're very important. We'll come back to that in a second. Mm-hmm. But also that there's a huge diversity within those tours and those communities of the people who play. And so we started filming, and you know, we went to a few tournaments that we were playing at, and there are three other subjects in the film. You know, one is a former army officer who had PTSD. One is male to female transsexual. One is an obese player. I knew them all loosely on the tour. They're good friends of mine now. But I was fascinated that ultimately what drew them together, and I think what draws us together, is not the fact that you know, you're LGBT, you know, LGBTQ. It's more around, it's not even necessarily tennis. I mean, tennis is the kind of sort of glue that sort of drew us together. But what they all really had in common was finding a sense of themselves and a sense of acceptance through sport and community, actually, which I think is one of the massive powers of sport in itself. And if you watch that movie, you know, it's 20 minutes long, it's on YouTube, you can Google it, you'll see that all of those people are kind of at different levels in the spectrum of kind of self-acceptance. Like, mm-hmm. if you look at Giselle, who is the male-to-female transsexual, I mean, she's super confident.
Yes, you know, yes, absolutely.
Very alluring personality. You know, there's sort of no doubt in her mind that anything she wants to do, she can make happen and manifest, and she has, you know.
Right.
And some of the others of us, as you see in the movie, are sort of somewhere else along that scale. But I think what helps us get towards that level of acceptance and sort of, you know, unconditional self-love is it is being part of this community. It is sort of, you know, having something that gives you something like a sport, which gives you more than just the physical activity, but, you know, family, community, sense of self, sense of identity, that kind of thing. So that's sort of how the movie ended up becoming what it was. So, you know, it's about tennis, but it's not really about tennis.
Right. And a leadership within that community, because if you are harboring self-doubt, or you're new to this tennis community, be it gay or straight or whatever community, and you see someone like Giselle, one, mop the floor with you on the court, and then two, go over and graciously say, that was a great game. Yeah. You can do this too.
Yeah.
And that transcends sexuality. Like if you get your ass handed to you by someone and they don't petulantly walk off because they messed up, they go, wow, that was a great job, you're going to be great one day. You go, wow, Roger Federer just said that to me. Yeah. Oh my God. Right. Yeah. And but on the social spectrum, if you see an out transgender powerful woman like Giselle go like kick your ass on the court and then like fist pump and be like booyah, then you're like look at her, she doesn't have a care in the world, she's the center of her own world, blah 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 blah, and that can elevate me in my sporting life and in my sexuality or my civil rights life or whatever it might be that is either oppressing me externally or internally or whatever demons I might be battling.
Exactly. And you know, if you watch the film, it does touch on, so the two other characters in there, Jean Telfort, who was in the army, and
but actually all three stories were so moving because they're just three different directions. And he was great because he's like, I was losing my mind. The army killed me, you know.
Thank you for those comments on the movie. But you know, Jean, he will say in the movie that, you know, when he came out of the army, he wasn't fit to be around people, and mm-hmm. you know, his way of sort of dealing with that was to, you know, to get into tennis. And you know, when we think about activism, Giselle, Chip, and Chip is the you know, the guy who's overweight who plays tennis, and we'll come to him in a second. Yeah, he's great. His story was really amazing.
I mean, please watch this film. Yeah. You know, in fact, right now, pause, take 20 minutes, watch it, and come back. 3, 2, 1. Welcome back.
Hopefully you enjoyed Queens at Court, which you found on YouTube after Googling that. But, you know, we were talking about activism having different forms, and Jean, you know, is very active in the community.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door.
Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Community and sort of very active on social media at corralling people together. And, you know, he has a tennis family group on Facebook. He's now started an annual Courage Awards, which happens every year in New York. And, you know, he celebrates people from the community who displayed sort of, you know, courageous behavior and things like that. Which is a great sort of event that he does. You know, he's very kind of outspoken and vocal. But then you think about somebody like Chip, you know, he also is an activist, but in a very different way. You know, I talked about just showing up.
Yeah.
And he will say himself, most people when they see him on court, they probably will think, like, what is he doing here? And I have to be honest, before I knew him and I saw him at an event, I think I had the same thought and was like, well, you know, how does that guy even play? But as I got to know him, you know, as a friend, and knew more about his story, particularly through the making of this movie, I cannot honestly say that if I were in his position, that I would be going and turning up on tennis courts.
I would not. That was the exact thought that went through my head when I watched Chip's story. I couldn't do that. I would, and I. He is incredibly brave.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm dealing with this issue. But I love me some tennis. I'm exactly. Gonna get out there, and then you see everyone turn around, and they're all like, "Yeah, come on, let's do it."
Yeah.
He's trying,
yeah.
And no one else tries. Yeah. And like I was a little beklempt, choked up listening to him.
Yeah.
He's
living, right? I mean, you know, he doesn't stop him living. And it interesting. So Queens at Court is actually how I got involved with the USTA, but he, sorry, at that time, Dia Abrams, who was then the head of diversity for the USTA, came to a screening that I held in New York and then decided to sort of use that as part of their diversity outreach programs. And so there were a series.
Did that division exist before?
The
diversity outreach
yes,
committee.
Okay. So the USTA's sort of national staff has a diversity department, diversity and inclusion department, and he was the head of that for many, many years and did a really great job. So, you know, we devised this series of events back in 2014 where we went to what was then the Emirates Airlines US Open series, mm-hmm. hardcore events that led up to the US Open. And we had these pride events. So we would go to tournaments that were interested. We'd show the movie. You know, we'd have sort of drinks and snacks, and then we'd have a discussion around it, and then everyone would go and watch the matches. And actually, those pride events, and many of those tournaments still happen today. So it's, you know, and they've taken a different flavor, and they've sort of broadened and expanded. But it's actually kind of exciting to see that that's continuing. And the US Open just had their first pride event this year, actually, which was great. But what I was going to say was during the course of that tour that we did, and we went to about, I think, 6 or 7 events. I can't remember now. The story that resonated with people generally the most, you know, different colors, different genders, different sexualities, it was always Chip's story.
Yeah.
And I think part of the reason is that, you know, he sort of, speaks very physically to people because of how he looks, but actually that makes it very relatable. So, you know, everyone can kind of identify with how he feels and the struggle and that kind of thing. And they're basing it on whatever their own kind of struggle is. And that might be because they're gay, or, you know, because they're somebody of color, or, you know, they're facing that kind of in some area of their life. So I always found it interesting that, his story was the one that resonated with people the most of really broad spectrum of people.
Well, you know, I think we've harped on a mantra here of the just showing up, because we have the chips of the world who just show up and make people take pause and reflect back on themselves and be like, one, would I have the courage to do that? Yeah. You know, and more often than not, I guess most people's answer would be like, no, I don't. But then you have to go deeper and be like, yes, I would. I would have the courage to just show up. So it starts sort of, it's sort of this weird like depression happiness curve that looks sort of like an inverse circle with a loop at the top, right? Where you're like, no, I couldn't do that. Wow, he's motivating. Yes, I can, right?
Right.
Yeah, this, it starts at the top. You're like, I couldn't do that. Oh no, I couldn't do that. Oh, it moves over to he's really moving, to then it just skyrockets to if he can, I can. Yeah. And that's the just showing up clause.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think, you know, we're sort of separating the kind of, you know, professional and
we're now in the self-reflection. Yeah,
but I think it is, you know, I'd made the comment before that I'm not sure how necessary it is to have a, you know, an out male player on the tennis tour who's sort of playing actively today, and I'm sure I'll get lots of backlash and opinions about that. But I don't know if the fact that there isn't one, I'm not sure how much that limits young gay kids who are on the path to be professional athletes. I don't know how much it limits them from actually entering into that.
Right.
I don't know. So I'll probably get into trouble for saying that. But when it comes to the sort of more social aspect and things like that, and you have, you know, your gay sports leagues, you have the gay games, I think it is still incredibly important that those organizations exist, right? Because it does provide a kind of, you know, safe haven, you know, a safe sort of community space for people to really be authentic. You know, I think in that sense, it allows people to perhaps come back to a sport that they left behind because of those reasons, like because they didn't feel accepted and things like that, or allows people to pick up sports at a different age and still sort of get a competitive element, but still sort of have community as well. So I think there's always a debate about whether you really need these, you know, gay organizations or gay leagues or even the gay games and things like that. And I think there is still a huge space for them. I've been to at least three gay games now. And when I went to my first one in 2010 in Cologne, I thought it was going to be another tennis tournament, and I was there with Ken and a bunch of other friends and things, and it was such a moving experience. I wasn't expecting it at all. You know, there's the whole parade of nations that happens in the stadium, and, you know, literally there'll be one person from, you know, India or something like that who's competing, and you know that many of these people are coming from countries where they will be jailed or killed.
Yeah.
So I think in the LGBT community space, it sometimes does feel, it's sometimes easy to feel a bit disengaged and sort of disconnected from that community.
But then you see a case study like that, exactly. where there is a Brunei, someone from Brunei, exactly. Which is now it's punishable by death,
exactly.
Right? And that person goes, you know, fuck the police. Yeah. I'm going to go out there under my nation's flag,
exactly.
And this is a criminal offense.
Yeah.
And yeah, you're right. Yes, there's a still serious uphill challenges in the United States, but nothing compared. So again, this visibility and this community and this showing up and basically sometimes giving the finger to authority is necessary and powerful.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, and I think that is one of the major points of having these kinds of organizations that exist, right? Is to do that. You know, it's it does make you feel. Well, I'll just piggyback on everything that you just said. Like, it does make you understand that there is still work to be done, that there is a movement, and that you are part of that movement, right? So I found it to be a very sort of moving experience that way. And I mean, honestly,
sobering.
Yeah, I would encourage everybody to come and visit the Gay Games once. You know, it's also a cultural event.
Right.
It's not just a sporting event. But, you know, if you do go and you sort of, you know, go and watch some of the sports or go to some of the events and things like that, you know, you really sort of understand that this is a place where some people come, you know, for 1 week, mm-hmm. where they can truly just be who they are and they don't really have to worry about it. And you realize how, you know, I live a very privileged
wow, yeah.
lifestyle where I don't, you know, I don't worry about that in where I live or, you know, with the work that I do and that kind of thing. But it is an issue for people. And it, you know, it honestly, it always makes me cry because when I see the environment, people just want to be who they are and they just want to live. And it's like, why is that offensive to people? You know, why is it such a big deal? You just
and it's actually offensive to me that you need to forge these safe spaces and safe offense where people can just be like, this is literally me. India and China have, you know, 1/4 of the world's population, and there were probably 7 flags from each of those countries represented, right?
Right.
That's not right. That means there are God knows how many people just living in the shadows when I mean, it's the classic trope of the underground gay club of the 40s and the 50s where, you know, people mm-hmm. had to subversively slip in and give secret. And then finally, you were opened into the world, into the doors where you could just be yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah, fucking criminal.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, if you think about the Gay Games, the next Games is in Hong Kong in 2022. Now, we all know what's happening in Hong Kong at the moment. You know, it's a very sort of tricky, difficult situation. But, you know, as the communications officer for the Gay Games, I'm, you know, getting a lot of emails and things like that from people who are really concerned, and you know, people who will, you know, adamantly not go there because, you know, they don't accept LGBT people, and mm-hmm. it's you know, obviously it's very politically very tricky,
mm-hmm.
and I understand all of that, and that's people's rights and their choices to make. But I also, you know, my response generally always is that it's also important for us to go to territories where these policies are in place, simply just to show people that, you know, there's nothing to be afraid of, you know, with the LGBT people here. We're actually very good for the economy, very good for, you know, socioeconomics and that kind of thing. And so I think it's important to kind of show up and sort of present that face as well. Right.
It was, there is one quote in Queens at the Court, which was, listen, it's not a 24/7 orgy. And then someone yeah. goes, is it though? I wasn't invited.
That was me, I think. That comment. So always worried I'm missing out.
Yeah, yeah. All this erroneous demonization is immediately dispelled. Just be like, oh, it's just people. It's just people. Chill out. You
yeah.
know.
Yeah.
I
keep harping on about the Gay Games.
Please.
I think it's important. I mean, you know, it is this environment where, you know, literally if you've just picked up a sport, you can come and play and compete.
Oh really?
But they also have, you know, world records have been broken at the Games, and I think people don't understand that, you know,
it's the full spectrum.
Exactly. People take their sport very, very seriously there,
but also the spirited amateur has an opportunity to compete at the highest level.
Exactly.
In an embracing, uplifting community, like where we said earlier, where right. you get your ass kicked by one of the best athletes right. on earth, they give you a hug. They don't give you right. a dismissive, like stare.
Right. Well, I mean, it depends. You know,
there's assholes everywhere.
Exactly.
You know, it's like that one Simpsons where Bart gets the elephant and they put the elephant in the elephant, Stampy the elephant. They put the elephant in the elephant reserve yeah. and he just keeps bumping yeah, yeah. into all the other elephants. And the zookeeper goes, well, bot, yeah. like the people world, some animals are just assholes.
Exactly.
So, yeah, all right. There's a couple guys. There's that one yeah. sprinter, Dave. Stay away from that one sprinter, Dave. Dave, you know who you yeah. are. But we're joking, and it's funny, but that's great that the inclusion level is from world record beaters to yeah. I really want to give javelin a try.
Right. Right, exactly, you know. And I think, like I say, I think it's important to have these kinds of organizations that just are embracing and accepting, and you know, how often can you do that, where you know, you just pick up a sport and you want to kind of get a bit of a competitive flavor, and you're not necessarily going to be able to compete at, you know, the actual Olympics, but you know, this is a competitive environment where you can come and have fun and, you know, meet lots of people and that kind of thing. So all for a very worthwhile cause.
And I'm assuming the Gay Games gives back to the community also.
Yes. We have quite a lot of initiatives and things that go on between the games as well.
Right.
And, we often have different kinds of award ceremonies and things like that that go on throughout the year, and we'll go to different cities, and, you know, we always aiming to celebrate local businesses, you know, people from the LGBT community and those kinds of things. You know, we have a sponsorship program for athletes who come to the game. So, you know, we do a lot. It's really grown since Dr. Tom Waddell started it, you know, quite a few years ago. And I think the fact that it has grown, and, you know, participation numbers, I think, for the Paris Games, which was the most recent one, were 10,500, you know, shows that obviously there is a
10,500 athletes.
Yeah.
Absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
For comparison, how many athletes show up to the Olympics?
You know, that's a good question. I don't know the answer to that.
I think as the communications director, you should know that, because that's a...
Well,
that's
I'm not the communications director for the real Olympics, but I'm going to...
No, for your organization, I think that's a good metric, because you could be like, oh, 1,700 show up to the Olympics, but...
that's true. I'm Googling it.
We're Googling it as we speak. I'm actually curious at how many athletes show up at the Olympics, and if you top that or come under that. While we're looking that up, is Serena the greatest athlete of all time?
It's a good question. I'm probably a bit biased because I love Serena.
Everyone loves Serena.
Yeah. I think, you know, we have this debate all the time about on the male side, is, you know, Roger or Rafa the greatest.
I don't know, you flip a coin with that, because there's so many different metrics to measure them, because right. Okay, he's got him on this, he's got him on that, you know, oh, that was an injury year,
right?
Because you know, Rafa gets injured a little bit more than Roger does, but then it took Roger how many years to beat him at the French Open? Would he lose like six straight against him or something like that?
Yeah. Well, Roger won the French Open, but that wasn't against Rafa.
Oh, right. Because Rafa wasn't playing. That's why. There we go. Yeah.
I don't know. I think, when you look at Serena's... just to tie off on the men's side, actually. So this past weekend, we had the semi-annual meeting for the USTA, so all of the national committees get together, and actually Rod Laver was on stage yesterday at the General Assembly, and you know, you have to think, you know, he also is one of the greatest players of all time. He's the only guy that's won a calendar Grand Slam twice.
Yep.
So you know, you have to think about what defines success. But when it comes to Serena, I mean, when you look at the records that she has broken, it really is phenomenal. She's won everything, you know, statistics are kind of off the charts. I certainly, you know, and you just made a really, your question actually is very sort of on point to what we're talking about today, because what you asked me was, is she the greatest athlete of all time, not tennis player, right?
Yeah. Oh, I didn't even mean to do that, yeah. But I did mean to do that, because that's actually my question.
My opinion is she certainly is one of, I have to say, you know, and I think she still has a lot more to do. You know, she's not finished yet.
I mean, this will be a great way to close this conversation out. By the way, do we get how many the Olympics have?
Well, it says...
not the Winter Olympics, because like four people go to that one.
Well, it says just under 3,000.
All right. So take that.
102 events across 15 different sports.
Take that. That sounds about right. The United States sends like 300 people, right? But like most other nations send like, you know, 10, 5, 4, 2, you know?
Because
usually the United States is the most well represented, followed by Russia,
and then
China, and then, you know, crazy thing about India is India just doesn't have, other than Yeah. All right. We've got it. We're going to have a different topic on sports in India shortly.
Yes.
Oh, so back to the inclusion.
Actually,
and
that was the Winter Olympics.
Oh, stupid Winter Olympics.
So, I think it's more like 11,000.
Oh, damn it.
But, you know, we're
hey, you're
on par.
You're on par. You're on par. Yeah. That's fine.
And we don't, you know, generally the Gay Games doesn't have as many sports as the
more competitors and fewer sports.
Exactly.
There you are. Yeah. Take that, Olympics.
Exactly.
And Winter Olympics, just take everything. No, I'm kidding. I love both Olympics.
Yeah,
every couple of years, I'm like, oh, the Olympics are coming. I'm gonna watch everything. I'm gonna watch every single thing. Like, you think, ah, it's coming again. I don't really care. I really care. USA, USA, USA. In the middle of a bar at 3:30 in the morning.
Exactly.
Everyone's like, USA, USA. I'm like, why do we always care about it?
Yeah, exactly.
And we always think we're not gonna. I got the perfect way to close this conversation off, Shiv.
Okay.
We've got Serena, and now she's playing, you know, Coco and Naomi, and these are children. Mm-hmm. These are literal active children,
yeah,
who are younger than her first major wins.
Mm-hmm.
How uplifting must that be to have the opportunity to play against your literal childhood hero and beat her and have her share the stage with you and tell everyone to shut up and let her talk?
Yeah. I mean, I can only imagine it's a massive privilege for them to do that, you know, and you know, if you listen to Naomi, I'm a big fan of hers as well. You know, Coco beat Venus at Wimbledon, and you listen to what she says about Venus and Serena. I mean, really, you know, they've done so much for tennis, right, and for, you know, American tennis and things like that. But I think just in general, the younger players get very, very inspired by them. You know, they're still going after all of these, you know, so many years later. So, I mean, if you read what Naomi and Coco will say about them, I think for them it's just almost dream come true, right? It's
yeah,
a massive privilege to share that stage. And I think probably for Serena too, you know, she's probably excited to see future generations coming up. And whenever she and Venus retire, which hopefully will be never, but you know, at some point when they do, you know, I think they will know that tennis is sort of
future tennis is in good hands.
Exactly.
Shiv Paul, this has been absolutely remarkable. If you have time, please go to YouTube and check out Queens at the Court. And let's all embrace Shiv's mantra and the mantra of the Gay Games and the mantra of tennis. And just go out there and represent yourself and play and just, play hard.
Just show up.
Just show up.
Yeah.
Excellent. Shiv, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.